if you look back 15 years ago, Singapore's entrepreneur ecosystem is not very well developed. There are gaps in the ecosystem. So as an educational institution, part of our strategy is to try to plug these gaps. So, for example, when we first started, there was no strong, viable angel investment community. So I, having been an angel investor myself, then I created the first business angel network in Singapore. It's almost similar to what Techco's Angels in, you know, in California and so on. And then we also initially started with providing some seed funding for our spin-off company from the universities. So the idea is that, just like the saying goes, right? It takes a whole village to educate a child. So it takes a whole ecosystem, right, to nurture an entrepreneur. Okay, coming back to Southeast Asia, I guess this is another kind of, you would say, a market gap. Because until recently, there is very few investor, angel, or VC who are actually has the network and contact to help a startup from Singapore to grow to the region. Because if you think about a startup starting in Singapore, he may not have the connection to Indonesia or to Thailand and so on, right? So, and the investor, frankly, wasn't able to help them to grow there either because they also do not have the, you know, investment partner in this place and so on. So I think, therefore, the first part is to really help encourage more investors to think about that the ASEAN as a pan-ASEAN as a market. Singapore obviously had a competitive advantage compared to Indonesia or Malaysia because our own domestic market is small. Tokopedia could just survive and do very well in Indonesia, right? They don't need to get out of Indonesia at least for a while, yeah? But if you start something in Singapore, you have to get out of Singapore very fast, otherwise you have no market. So we don't have a home market strong advantage to start off with. That's why the strategy, in my view, would be that we need to actually encourage startup here to have a pan-ASEAN market approach from day one. So one of the things we try to encourage is that the students who are interested in exploring, why not you try and build a pan-ASEAN team, you know? You have someone from Indonesia, someone from Singapore, someone from Malaysia, so that from day one when you start, you have a founder partner who is able to leverage their social network connection back in their home country, right? So that is one strategy. The other, of course, is that you try to say that Singapore, if you have a very strong, conducive environment with venture capital support mentoring, whoever who wants to build pan-ASEAN market, even if you are from Indonesia or from Malaysia, you can come to Singapore, get started, and then leverage this pan-ASEAN sort of a network that Singapore hopefully will develop over time to reach out to the home market. And that's why over the last few years, actually to the credit of the government, they have actually started to incentivize and attract a number of venture capital or incubators that have this pan-ASEAN sort of focus. So Wavemaker is an example, right? And so if we attract a few more of those that have this pan-ASEAN outlook, then the investor will then be able to help the startup, once they invest in them, to scale to the region because of the connection they will have, because of the focus they will have. How smart you are, but having a mindset that basically looks out for opportunities, and also therefore a mindset that you need to go and mobilize resources to help you exploit the opportunity, sort of a bias for action, as the academic would say, yeah? So we therefore think that through this experiential learning, the student can acquire this mindset and skill set much more effectively. And also by putting them into this global entrepreneur hubs, they also first gain a global mindset that they recognize that the opportunities are global, but also competition is global. To me, there are three things that interest me about the aging market. The first, of course, is that it is, as everybody say, the silver tsunami is coming, right? I mean, the population is rapidly aging, not just in Singapore, but throughout Asia. Japan was already ahead of us, and then you see Taiwan, China itself, right? The actual adult working age population is shrinking, you know, and rapidly aging. And so this will be, in that sense, a great market opportunities. And also we are looking at, for the first time in history, I guess I belong to that generation of baby boomers, where we are, have an aging population that are also sufficiently have reasonable income and reasonably healthy, that we can continue to be very active. And so we are also looking at completely new market opportunities of how do you reach out to these relatively wealthy and active and mobile ager. Because sometimes people, when they talk about aging, they have this view that you are dealing with sort of very, you know, people who are immobile, you know, bedridden and sick and so on. But you, there are different segments in the aging sort of markets, and you have therefore a lot of work opportunities. And I guess one of the challenges very often is that when I deal with young entrepreneurs, because they see opportunity that are among themselves, right? Because they deal with young people, and so they see less of this opportunity, and therefore I feel that the opportunity is not fully sort of tapped. I guess the second part to that would be that, in a way, this aging is also representing a social challenge, and therefore it require a lot of change in the current business model, even the way that you know, institutions are being built, like the way hospitals are built. You need completely new business paradigm to deal with this social challenge. So you think about, instead of people going to a hospital, you think about home care, right? So this is a great opportunity for really disruptive, new innovative thinking about business model. And I believe that this give rise to a lot more opportunities for disruption and new sort of approaches, which is not just technology, right? But it allows you to sort of rethink the whole business process, rethink certain social institutions. Of course, there are other startups that require deep technologies. You need to work in the lab for 10, 15 years to have something that, you know, you can pull it out. I think for those, my advice would be that, you know, you should always keep in mind the customer market needs, so that, and also to recognize that you need to find the partners to work with you, because it's seldom the case that your technology solves the entire problem. Very often your technology needs to be embedded as part of larger solutions. And therefore you need to think about a business model where, you know, you can bring in all these other partners. And so having this understanding that you need to work with an ecosystem to actually get your technology to be, now we're talking about deep technology now, to be embedded in a product that deliver a total solution to a customer market. And that's why in our work with the professors and with the tech, you know, we want to get them to have this mindset, you know, that don't try to reinvent the wheel, and try to work with existing partner channels to embed this.